When I became involved with the Growth Committee, my mind started asking questions that they had never asked before. It had never asked before. One of the questions was, how do people get to this church? Another question was, why do they stay? And particularly, why do they stay in this church? The first question, how do they get here, was really quite an easy one to answer. It's our website. Becky looked up the statistics from all our visitors' cards, and we discovered that 99% of the people come through websites. Every time I see a visitor, I ask them, how did you find our church? And the inevitable answer is the website. So the people who designed, work on, and continue to maintain that website are hugely responsible for the growth of this church. That's how people come here. Yeah, we should give them a hand. Now, I got very curious about church websites after I learned this. So I looked at every Unitarian church website you could possibly think of. I looked at big churches, churches smaller than ours, and our website is a wonderful, wonderful website. I couldn't go to another one and point my finger at it and say, that's better than ours, because I didn't find one better than ours. So that's how people get here. They get here by the website. Now I bet you're all wondering, what's the other 1%? The other 1% is saying to somebody, would you join us? Would you come to church? I go to the First Unitarian Church. Would you do you want to come? Are you interested? But 99% is our website. What a role. And I bet most of these people are so quiet about the time that they spend working on the website, but what giving they give to this church. Now, the second question was, why do people come to church? And why do they come to this church? Well, I thought that's kind of intrusive to go up to visitors after they've stayed for a while or once they become members and say, why are you here? You know, I couldn't figure out a tactful way to say it. So I do what I always do. I turn to the literature, and I started reading about why people come to church. And I discovered there's some really strange benefits to going to church. Do you know that if you go to church, you will live longer? True, okay. I can give you the person. A Dr. Hummer from University of Texas did this. This is not some schlock research not well done. This is good research. You will live longer. You will live 2 to 3 years longer by coming to church. Who knew? I didn't. But there's even more to that. Even something more. You will be healthier. Now, at first they thought it was because people who go to church maybe eat a healthier diet. And that's true of some churches, but that's not true of all churches. They don't necessarily go to the doctor more. In fact, they don't really know why this phenomenon exists. They just know that it does. They know if people who go to church pray and meditate, they will be even healthier. They know that if one, for example, has AIDS or asthma and you pray or meditate, your autoimmune system will improve. Amazing. Who knew that I would live longer and be healthier? In fact, church attendance, which seems to accompany prayer and meditation, makes your brain healthier. Your frontal lobes work better. An amazing thing. The part of the brain, the parietal lobe, that is partly responsible for creating excitement and manic behavior will calm down when you're upset if one prays, meditates, or goes to church. Who knew all this? I didn't. But I bet if I walked out and went up and down the aisles and asked every single one of you why you came to this church, not one of you would say, because I wanted to live longer and be healthy. So even though church attendance has those wonderful benefits of health and longevity, we don't come to church, nor do we stay in church because of that. Another thing that research shows is that people tend to seek out people who think like they do. So we tend to seek out people of similar thinking. I thought, well, that makes sense. Unitarians think pretty much alike. Until I started thinking about the churches, Unitarian churches in Chicago, there is one that is very, very traditional. If you walked in it, you would think you were walking into any Christian church. They sing hymns that are mainly Christian. They have a crucifix. But if you go just a few miles away, you will walk into a Unitarian church where there isn't one Christian symbol. Like-minded people. Well, sort of. We do have 8 principles that we encourage people to think about. But then I thought about this particular church. And I thought, we're like-minded. We're all people who really kind of think alike. And then one Sunday, someone got up and she gave the announcement about the new time the pagan group was meeting. Then I got up and I gave an announcement about when the Buddhist group was doing something. And then someone else got up and gave an announcement about some DVDs or CDs, I don't remember which, that were going to be played during our adult religious education. Now I could, that looked at the Bible and the history of the Bible. Now I could stand up here and off the top of my head for an hour, give you all the differences between Buddhism, paganism, and Christianity. Like-minded people, we have all this going on in this church. And then those of you who have been Unitarians for a long time will say, but we're a church of deeds, not creeds. So I thought, maybe that's it. We all like to come together and do similar deeds. Some of us like to clean highways because we think that is good caring for the earth. But then I've heard other people say, I don't know why they do that. But we all sit here together and attend church, and we don't all agree that cleaning highways should be a function. Some of us believe that we should be feeding people at least once a month who don't have as much food as we do. And I've heard other people say, that's not my thing. I don't care if they started it, but I don't want to take a part in it. Like-minded people. Now, I could go on with so many different things we do in this church that I really begin to wonder how like-minded we are, except for the fact that we will generally let anybody do most anything that's of value. But then what is our value? You know, we argue about that, I think. So I don't think we come here just because we want to find like-minded people. The third and biggest reason why people go to church, according to the research, is they get social support. And if you want to look this up, it's Krauss of University of Michigan has done all this research, okay? People benefit from supporting one another. And the church actually gives a lot of social support to people. I know that if I'm really down and out, there's a couple of things I can do. I can wait to Sunday and go to the Kate Worker room, and I can find somebody who will listen to me. I know that. I know I could probably pick up our what do I want to call it? Directory of members, and call people there and get them to listen. And I think people know that we can call each other if we wish. Yes, we give a lot of social support. We have fun things like picnics and newcomers parties, and we have give us kind of a place to have some enjoyable times together. We can, in fact, give each other a great sense of meaning by helping each other. I think the most surprising thing to me about Krause's research, the thing that really blew me away, was that it is not the people who are helped that get benefit. Oh, they do. They can actually show that if you're getting help from somebody, your serotonin levels go up and your norepinephrine evens out all those neurotransmitters in the brain, and you'll feel better, you'll feel less depressed. They have shown that if people go to church and they socialize afterwards, that they will actually be less depressed. So there's a lot of social benefits, but the surprising, the knock my socks off thing about Krause's research is that the people who benefit more from the social networks at church are not the people who receive, but the people who give. Wow. You mean those serotonin levels are better because I'm giving something? Well, that's what the research shows. And I'm going to do a little digression right now about giving. Our church has grown tremendously. And to keep it growing, we need people to give. I discovered one Sunday, Brenda called me and asked, could you step in and be a greeter? No problem, Brenda. No big deal. What's the big deal, being a greeter? I was exhausted. First of all, you got to get here early. You got to gather up the little packets we give visitors. Then you got to find everyone. You got to encourage them to sign a card then or a card later. Then after all that's done, and make sure you don't catch them, you can catch them before they run out the door, because we want our visitors to feel welcome, and we really want them to feel welcome. That's one of the things that got me back here, was how much people made me feel welcome. But not only after that, you have to run to the Kate Worker Room and then make sure they're engaged and happy. Now, that sounds funny, but the first week I came here, I was about ready to leave till somebody came up to me and said, who are you? I haven't seen you before. So making people feel welcome, and Brenda does all that, and my goodness, we need more greeters. Otherwise, we're going to make her so tired, we're going to be visiting her to take care of her health. Okay? We need people to do the coffee hour. We need people to give and do things like that. So when we all go back there and we want to socialize, whether we're members or not members, we all feel we have that opportunity to socialize. And, you know, having coffee makes the big difference. So that's my digression from why we're here. But now I'm going to get back to it. So I thought about health. I thought about social support. I thought about that we all belong to a community that is very allegedly similar in thought. And I thought, okay, that's why we're here. No, I don't think so. First of all, most of us probably didn't know going to church was good for your health. Social activity? You know, there's a lot of things I can do, a lot of places I can go to get social activity if I want a group. Just write your Chamber of Commerce and they'll send you a book. I don't care what town it is. They'll send you a book of all the organizations that exist in town. I think I counted something like 52 in Alton. Any one of those will give you a place to go. Everything from university women that see that women get scholarships to volunteering for the Boys and Girls Club, the Rotary. I mean, I can just go on and on. Work with the Lions and see that the blind get glasses. There's all kinds of things we can do. You know, we can join organizations for integration that exist in this area. There's just tons of things. We don't need this church to socialize. It's nice to have. And we do have a huge group that support each other. But I really, really don't think we come here for our health or to socialize. If all we came for was socialization, why would we sit in these pews from 10:30 to 11:30? We could just arrive at 11:30 and go back into the Kate Worker room. So it's true. I don't think that's why we're here. I don't think we're here because we're like-minded. I gave too many examples of how we're not like-minded. So I'm left with the question of why are we here, and more specifically, why are we here in this church? And I really don't know. I can't give you with the assurance of research that I have the answer. But I have a guess. I think somehow we know that when we sit in these pews together and when we open a hymnal together, there's something very different about that than if I take this same hymnal home and stand and sing by myself. I think we know that there's something very different about listening to a call for worship, about giving, about gathering together in this spot, that's different than belonging to a social club or finding like-minded people. So I have to ask myself, what is the difference? And then I realize I have to be real careful with the language that I use, because I've heard people leave this church if the word God is used. So I'm going to think about something different, a different word. I think in the here and the now, in the moment that we are together, that when we come like this, we somehow, as different as we are, from age to ideation, I think we, in our presence together, evoke the sacred. And I think somehow, underneath everything, no matter what our ideation is, we know that. Whatever the sacred is for you. I remember one time when I was working with a man who was a severe alcoholic and wanted to quit. And he said, AA bothers me because I don't believe in a higher power. I don't think there is such a thing as a higher power. And I said to him, what makes you feel utterly at peace? And he said, well, in my mother's backyard, there's a tree. And I like to go talk to that tree. Okay, go talk to the tree. And he came back one day and he goes, You're going to think I've been drinking, but I haven't been. But there's something sacred about that tree. And I said, what do you mean by sacred? And he said, well, you know where there's that hole inside of you that says you're not complete? And I went, yeah. And he goes, well, when I sit there in quiet and I just look at that tree and I'm very still and very quiet, that hole goes away and I know I'm complete. I don't have the hole in my soul anymore. I think that's the best definition of sacred I've ever heard. This is a sacred place, and I don't think it would be the same if we came in here when it was totally empty and just sat and prayed or meditated or just thought. I think it takes all of us together to make it that sacred place.